Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. For today's podcast, we're going to be delving into a number of UK equities, as well as looking at some of the key market themes out there. And to do that, we're very kindly joined once more by Alan Green. Alan, thank you very much for being on the podcast this morning.
Good morning again, John. How are you doing?
Yes, very, very well. Thank you. Very well. Fully in the swing of 2023. It's been a particularly busy year so far. How are things going on your side, Alan?
Yeah, Christmas is a dim and distant memory now. We are, as you say, well entering into 2023. It's been a fairly solid start, I think. And I think there were fears, certainly pre-Christmas, that everything would nosedive in the new year. But I mean, from the domestic standpoint and also markets globally, it's been anything but. I think I wouldn't say Putin's a busted flush, but I think the rhetoric now seems to look at Putin as somebody that's come to the end of the line. He's running out of options. The Russian economy no longer figures on the world stage. So, of course, we're getting on without it. Alternatives are being sourced. And indeed, there was an article in the New York Times a few days ago about cooling inflation. What's happening next? Inflation there is down to 6.5% from the highs of 9% last summer. So, of course, that's due to a fall in fuel prices, in the cost of energy, and so on. So of course we've got this prospect ahead of us now. Meanwhile, of course, here in the UK, we nearly got to those new highs that we were talking about a few weeks ago. The FTSE's been pushing the limits higher, and of course that's all driven by dollar earners, because the FTSE's predominantly made up of dollar earning stocks. So very much a reflection of the global economy, but certainly a good start to the year, and I think a better start to the year than many of us had anticipated.
Indeed, in the last quarter of last year, when we were looking at some of the economic predictions from investment banks and economists and central banks, it was looking like it was going to be a pretty dire start to 2023. But as you mentioned there, Alan, it's things have actually become slightly more optimistic, especially if you're looking at the likes of Goldman Sachs, for example, that have reiterated their concern about the trajectory of global growth, but at the same time saying they no longer see a recession in Europe, which is a real change from some of the predictions last year. And it's starting to creep in not only to Europe, but the UK and the US. Of course, tomorrow we get GDP figure for the fourth quarter from the United States. That's going to be a very closely watched data point. That's going to give deep insight into what the Federal Reserve could be doing next, what their next move will be on interest rate hikes, when we're going to be looking at 25 basis points or a 50 basis points hike in US rates. There's, of course, an element of realization that we're going to see further rate hikes, not only from the Central Bank of the United States, but probably here in the UK in the first quarter of this year. But it's then beyond that how they then start to move to manage inflation. If we have inflation rates which are declining, there's not really that need for them to be as aggressive with the rate hikes, and that's going to be seen as a positive in markets. And it's really quite interesting. So looking before we started recording, Alan, and the way that the FTSE 100 outperformed major indices in the United States last year. So the FTSE 100 was up 1%, in itself not a great performance, but when you compare that to a 19% decline in the S&P 500 last year and a 33% decline in the NASDAQ, it is a significant outperformance of those indices. And indeed, it is an outperformance of the FTSE 250, of course, the mid-cap market here in London, more domestically focused than the FTSE 100. That was down 19% on the year. So, you know, looking at that index, that's up about 4% so far in that early weeks of 2023, whereas the FTSE 100 is up about 2%. So there's a slight outperformance there so far. But when you're sort of looking over at the US stocks, comparing them to FTSE 100 companies, Alan, because we had that severe underperformance, it was really a tech story last year through the cycle of higher rates. Of course, that really did ask some questions of US tech stocks, and they were, you know, simply destroyed last year. But looking at what's been happening in the last week or so, do you think that that defensive element that caused the outperformance of the FTSE 100 last year could mean that it actually drags behind the performance of the S&P 500, the NASDAQ, and also the FTSE 250 here as we move through 2023?
I think there's enough of a mix of technology within the FTSE 100. We've got large stocks like Vodafone, which will benefit from upturn, a general upturn in technology. I think there's enough exposure there for the FTSE to be carried along with that. But of course, you pointed out the FTSE 250 there, John, falling 19%. That is very much more reflection of the domestic economy. So I think what's going to be important this year, if we can see a strong performance or a recovery from the FTSE 250, that I think will feed through into the domestically orientated FTSE 100 stocks, and also, of course, the directly or indirectly into the technology stocks as well. But I think we're still, although we've decoupled in a sense from the from Europe, I think we're still very much coupled and harnessed to the global economy, and of course we're now seeing UK PLC go out and do business unencumbered by the restrictions of Europe with the rest of the world. So I think as the global economy recovers, UK companies or UK PLC will be and should be a prime recipient of that. And I think it's going to be a very important year on so many levels with that. But certainly, you know, it's I think you've got to, if you're looking at the indices at the moment, it's a question of whether you are a bottle half full or a bottle half empty merchant. Personally, I've always been a bottle half full. I'm a great believer in the UK economy and, you know, what we can do as a nation, and also, you know, what our banking and financial system can do in regard to benefiting from an improvement in the global economy.
Yes, indeed. I mean, just looking at the best performers of the FTSE 100 so far this year, we have IAG, JD Sports, Whitbread, Rolls-Royce, Intercontinental Hotels, AB Foods, Entain, Ocado. You know, these are all stocks with exposure to the UK consumer. And the UK consumer was a story last year, which was looking pretty dire. And, you know, we're looking at retail sales that from December, you know, weren't particularly fantastic, but when we saw the updates and the Christmas updates from a lot of these companies. Now, of course, some of these companies are operating overseas as well, but they're based here in the UK and they do quite a lot of business with the UK market. They were relatively upbeat, and, you know, it showed that these companies have been able to, you know, really get past all of these doomsayers that were saying, you know, we're going to see a destruction in demand. You know, particularly JD Sports is one that jumps out. Very good set of numbers from them. Of course, IAG is benefiting from a bounce back in holidays, and that's going to be a company that we discuss with a company in that sector in EasyJet a little bit later on in the podcast. But it looks as though this story of, you know, real doom and gloom around the UK economy and, of course, the global economy is just starting to ease. And that's being reflected in some of the stocks that we're seeing moving. So that's going to be an interesting story to see how that develops going forward for the rest of the year. But as I mentioned, Alan, the first company we're going to discuss today is a FTSE 250 constituent. Now, it was for a long time in the FTSE 100, but of course, The pandemic put pay for that, and I'm sure. So looking at the numbers that we've seen today, maybe one that gets back into the FTSE 100 at some point. It's EasyJet, very strong set of numbers from them. So what was the key takeaways, Alan?
Well, it's been a very strong and very upbeat trading statement from EasyJet, and of course shares are up 9% already this morning. Seeing the shares trading at £5.10p or 510p, and that's particularly significant given that on the 30th of September last year, you could have picked up the stock at a year low, and indeed that the actual intraday year low was £2.76. So, you know, we're almost double that already. But I think what's particularly impressive is that on the 30th of December, the shares were trading at £3.24. So within a few weeks, had you bought EasyJet shares in that window between Christmas and New Year, you'd be sitting on a very handsome profit now. So that really encourages me. You know, a stock that had been absolutely battered to pieces by COVID has hung in there, and there are some very good reasons for that. The you know, EasyJet's network is one of the best networks for a mid-sized carrier in the world. I mean, the company has all its planes based at the right airports with the right routes, capturing a demand as holidaymakers return. And of course, it is a fickle industry in a sense. You know, we've seen this nascent pent-up demand where people have been locked down at home and sort of spending money on the house and all the rest of it, and are not traveling. Now they're able to travel again. So, boy, is it resurging with a vengeance. And we've seen during the first quarter, EasyJet's revenue was 1.5 billion, a 20% increase in ancillary revenues like extra people paying for extra legroom on a flight and food on a flight. And overall, that revenue was up 36% in the last quarter. But given the increase that we're seeing now, of course, that indicates the market expects a continuing improvement in these levels of performance. And although the company's reported a loss in the period, it's still very much a loss of 122 million on the period. It's still a big improvement on the performance previously. And given the revenues it's turning over, it won't take much for that 122 million loss to turn into a profit next time around. And certainly the forecast, the guidance for the group looking forward is it expects a significantly better performance than last year looking forward, upgrades profit expectations for the half year, it's seeing a real surge forward in ticket yields and bookings. And of course, that's all based on the factors we were discussing just now, which is the marked improvement in the economy. You know, we're seeing inflation falling, people are prepared to get back on planes. Of course, that could all change very quickly indeed. You know, if for whatever reason the war in Ukraine ramps up or there's a resurgence in COVID, all of these factors have to be taken into account. But certainly, based on where we are now, we've seen a very strong performance for EasyJet already. But on the five-year highs, I mean, we're seeing, the shares have traded on the current year as high as £7.29. So to me, there looks to be, given the momentum and the sheer pace of revenue growth, I think there is certainly scope for significant further upside. So I would probably mark the shares down as a speculative buy at this level, even though the shares are up nearly 10% this morning.
When we're looking at EasyJet, Alan, now of course, the period that they're reporting on was actually some of the first months that people could go away on that period compared to the same period a year prior without any major COVID restrictions. Do you think there's an element of pent-up demand in these numbers that may peter out as we go through into the next year?
Well, I think that pent-up demand is just people able to get back on a plane and travel again. But if the demand continues, is there any reason that it shouldn't continue? I think restrictions are now lifted. COVID is under control. We've got these X factors, of course. We've got the X factor about, could the war in Ukraine ramp up? Uh, could could Russia, the Russia situation deteriorate further. It's not really a significant factor on the global economy anymore. But obviously, you know, given the weaponry or the arsenal of weapons that Putin has, there is always that concern. And of course, then we have COVID. You know, China, the lockdown in China is now eased. People traveling from China have to test and ensure they're COVID-free before they travel. So that's a good thing. But, you know, could it spread again? Of course, these are all factors we'll just have to live with. But personally, I think the COVID has now become like flu. You know, so you'll need your vaccination or your booster every year. But let's hope we can now keep it at bay with that. And given that scenario, I see no reason really why EasyJet and also the other carriers in the sector shouldn't offer further upside for investors at this point.
Indeed, it certainly looks as though those shares are starting to build some momentum to the upside. So we're going to move on now, Alan, to the next company we're going to discuss today. It's Cadence Minerals. Their CEO, Kieran Morzero, was on the podcast earlier on in January detailing some key updates at their flagship Amapa iron ore project in Brazil. But today, Alan, it's an update from one of their other holdings within their portfolio.
Yeah, Cadence Minerals are, of course, a mining investment company, and they have a raft of stakes in listed companies. Today they've announced the completion of the sale of the Yangibana Rare Earths project. And I'm going to go through each of these in turn because I think it's really important to understand how Cadence is valued. Now, Cadence currently has a market capitalization of 29 million total sterling. So it's trading 17 pence. And of course, last year it raised funds at 20p. So we're still under that raised price. So what it means today, it's completed sale of the Yangibana joint venture interest to Hastings Technology Metals, which is ASX listed, currently has a market capitalization of 472 million Australian dollars. And the Yangibana project as a whole currently has a net present value of 1 billion Australian dollars. So, of course, that's hugely significant. With its stake, Cadence has received 9 million Australian dollars of shares in Hastings. That's roughly 1.9% of the company. So, of course, if the market cap of Hastings improves as they get towards production, which it's likely to, then, of course, that valuation will rise accordingly. But that's basically it's currently around 5 to 6 million pounds sterling, but it could be a lot higher than that if the NPV valuation is reflected in that. So if we give it that valuation at the moment of about 6 million, we then have earlier in the year Hastings announced it completed the equity stake in Lithium Technologies and lithium to supplies to a company called Evergreen that is also set to list on the ASX. Now, potentially, that could be up to $21 million, Australian dollars. That's 12 million pounds sterling once that's completed. So if we take that, we've then got a valuation of 18 million pounds sterling. Then Cadence also has an 8.1% stake in the Sinovet lithium project through European Metals Holdings. So it owns shares in EMH, 8.1%. EMH is currently worth 73 million pounds sterling. So you can work that out. That's roughly about another 6 million. So that takes us up to about, probably 25 million. And what that means is that the company's flagship project, which of course, as you pointed out, John, is the Amapa iron ore project, is worth currently a paltry 6 million pounds sterling. Now, Cadence owns 30% of the Amapa iron ore project. Back in 2012, the Amapa iron ore project, which is owned then by Anglo American, was valued at $600 million US dollars on its books. Since then, Cadence has bought the Amapa mine, the railway, and the Santana port out of administration. It's working there with through its local company Dev with the local authorities there to recommission the mine, to redevelop the area. And of course, there's all of the benefits in terms of health, in terms of education that it's bringing to the region. The company announced at the start of the year that it announced a pre-feasibility study with a maiden ore reserve estimate of 195.8 million tons of iron ore, which is basically about 39.3% Fe or iron, you know, which is you know, really high quality. It's already sold tailings that have been sitting at the port for years. It's sold several shiploads of that worldwide and raised further monies. So we have PFS done. The DFS definitive feasibility study is now well underway, and that will be completed shortly. So within, you know, possibly as soon as 18 months, the Amapa iron ore mine could be up and running and producing again. So given the scope of production, the fact that Cadence's stake is valued at just £6 million pounds sterling is ludicrous. You know, if the company expects to generate an average life of mine EBITDA of $235 million per annum. You know, so where does that register on the valuation of $6 million? You know, I've said it before, I'll say it again, Cadence is hugely undervalued. And, you know, once we get closer to production, I would expect to see that valuation gap close very rapidly indeed. But still now, you know, to invest into this company now, you've got three clear, tangible listed investments, plus the Amapa on top of that. And I think Cadence has got a really exciting year in prospect. And, you know, within a few years, the shares could be at many multiples of where we are now.
Yes, I mean, just looking at how things have developed at Cadence over the last year, it's, you know, it's been quite dramatic, actually, with the Yungi Barn. And now it's, you know, having that visibility of the valuation by having an investment in a listed vehicle really does de-risk that investment to some extent and give investors a clearer visibility of the value to Cadence. So it's going to be interesting to see how that develops, and also, I mean, one particular thing that I'm going to be interested to see is how Evergreen pans out. Of course, lithium is a hot topic at the moment, for good reason. You know, sort of looking at those demand figures, we won't go into them now, but, you know, there needs to be a huge amount of lithium brought online in terms of production in the next 10 years. And Evergreen's very well placed to be part of that movement. So we're going to finish off now, Alan, with the company. It's provided an update. It's HVivo.
HVivo, yes. So again, we look at the share price. You know, over the past year, the shares have really, since the start of the year, really bounced off those lows. It was trading at 10p on the 30th of December, now trading at 17p. And shares are up 14% today on the back of a very strong trading update. So HVivo, of course, is the former Open Orphan. Chairman Carl Friel is well known among investing circles. You know, he's very much a guy who puts his money where his mouth is. That he personally, through his company, holds a big stake in Open Orphan and is very much you know, he's very much had a vision for this. Also, a company he founded, Amrit Pharma, recently sold for $1.5 billion, It's just indicative of Carl's Midas touch within the sector. And of course, today is no exception. So HVivo announced or provided a trading update. And what the company does, of course, it has it's a world leader in testing infectious and respiratory diseases using human challenge clinical trials. And Open Orphan HVivo became famous during COVID, of course, with its testing centres in East London, several centres in London and in Manchester, where people were being tested, given a mild dose of COVID in the hunt for a vaccine. Of course, they were instrumental in that process. They also have a similar setup for flu and for other infectious diseases. So they're experts in human challenge trials, And if you look at the news track record, you'll see they've been generating contract after contract after contract. It's just a steady flow of news. And then today, the company announced record revenues for the year, up 30% to just over 50 million sterling. EBITDA margins jumped massively from 7% last year to 17% this year, and that was significantly ahead of guidance, which was around 13%. Also, the company's ending the year with cash of 28.4 million sterling on its books and a forward order book of 76 million for this year, which is up 65% year on year. And also for shareholders who've stuck with it, there's going to be a shareholder distribution on publication of the full audited accounts. Of course, that will come shortly. And significant, you know, with any company, forward guidance is key to its success. With hVIVO, over 95% of revenue for 2023 is contracted already. So that's already coming in. And there's also forward revenue visibility into 2024 too. So, you know, it's very unusual for a company within the pharma and the biotech industry to have this sort of cash flow. So hVIVO is very much evolving from a company which was initially out there with an idea into a mid-sized pharma company. But it's not there yet. I mean, the company still has a valuation of just 117 million. And I think with the NASDAQ listing, you know, you'd probably see a valuation double that, because companies are just valued much more highly on the NASDAQ for that region. So in summary, the company says it's entered the 2023 well capitalized, 28.4 million, no debt at all, and record visibility in the current financial year. And of course, the chief exec, Yaman Mo Khan, said the record numbers is announced today, a result of the hard work by everyone at hVIVO. But also they're seeing, you know, real growth in the potential marketplace. There's this increasing prevalence. You know, we mentioned COVID, of course. Will it recur, or will a mutation of that evolve in some way? And hVIVO recognize that, and they've said with the increasing prevalence and severity of infectious and respiratory diseases, that there's a vital need for new vaccines and antivirals. And hVIVO is now the human challenge partner of choice for the global biopharma industry. So I think we can expect to see hVIVO's order books continuing to fill as we go forward, as the company plays a significant role in accelerating development of these new medicines.
I mean, when we're looking at hVIVO, I mean, over the last 6 months, it's up significantly, but on the year, over the 52-week period, it's down slightly. I mean, when you're looking at the share price there, and obviously these orders coming through, Alan, I mean, do you feel that the current visibility on revenue going forward has the possibility of taking those shares above the 52-week high, or do you feel that we need to see further orders come into hVIVO to really sort of break up to all-time highs in this company?
Well, I think as usually happens, once a trading update like this goes out, then of course all the bean counters will go over the numbers, look at the forward order book, and make calculations. So we'll see probably, no doubt, some broker recommendations in the coming days based on those numbers. But I think what's clear is that as a machine, hVIVO is seriously gathering momentum. You know, it says it's the global partner of choice with the biopharma industry for human challenge testing. So this company is on a roll. It's the go-to place to get this sort of work done, and it's by far the most effective way to produce vaccines to fight these diseases. So I mean, to me, yes, that global order book's growing rapidly, you know, visibility into 2024, so that's not this year, that's next year, which is important. But I think you know, one of the big pharmaceutical companies could look at this and say, well, you know, this is fantastic. You know, we need a piece of this. So it wouldn't surprise me, just as Carl sold Amrit Pharma. I think the real upside will be not only the numbers that are already going to happen, but in the speculation about one of the really big guys coming in for a takeout. And I think that's where the excitement really lies now with this company.
Yes, I mean, certainly looking at those margins, 17% EBITDA margins, and the revenue figures they're predicting, you know, when you're looking at a company that has a market cap of only 110 million, I think there is a compelling valuation case to be had there and certainly worth a closer look. So just as a recap of the stocks that we discussed today, first up was EasyJet with the ticker of EZJ. We then moved on to Cadence Minerals, which has a ticker of KDNC. And we finished off just then with HVivo, which has a ticker of HVO. Alan, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Many thanks, John.
So just as a note to listeners, we have the first installment of 2023's virtual conferences coming up in February the 22nd. It'll be starting at 5 p.m. Do check out the events section of the UK Investor Magazine website. There'll also be a link in the notes to this podcast for that event. You can have a look at the companies that will be presenting. That will be the first of four or five events that we have in Q1. Some of them are going to be single companies. We've got the Investment Trust Conference coming up in early March. So do stay tuned and keep checking the events tab to get yourself registered for these events as soon as the invitations are available. So thank you very much for listening to the podcast. Bye-bye.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember all investment involves risk.